I'm Katie McGrady, and this is Ave Explores.
Well, I think I can finally say we made it. I mean, almost. We do have another week of Lent yet to go, so don't start eating the sweets and the sugars and the candies all that quickly, but we are finally in the home stretch. I think we could have said that maybe on the fourth Sunday of Lent. But the fifth Sunday of Lent is kind of when you can see some light at the end of the proverbial suffering, fasting, praying, almsgiving tunnel. There's an oasis out in the desert, and it's not just a mirage. There's really water over there. We're there. The fifth Sunday of Lent is the last one where we're going to walk into church and we won't be handed palms or see Jesus Christ's empty tomb. The fifth Sunday of Lent is the last time we'll have maybe some of those Lenten decor items that are in front of the altar or those purple booklets in the back of the church. The fifth Sunday of Lent is what signifies and signals to all of us that we can breathe. We did it. But you still have 7 days to go. So again, we can say we're almost there, but we're not quite there just yet. And so we're kind of in this liminal space of the Lenten season. This, it's almost over, but we still have a little ways to go. And so we want to finish strong. Breathe the sigh of relief. Yes, we're almost to the end, but also a moment maybe to be challenged to try a little harder, to go a little further, to recognize that God's not done just yet. Now, that's really easy for me to say, sitting behind a microphone. God's not done yet. You've still got some Lent to go. The desert could still be a place of great fruit and growth in your life. That what you've given up, give it up even harder. How you're praying, pray even more. Where are you being generous? Continue to do so. And maybe recognize that there's even more that we can do with that generosity. If Lent is all about us trying to draw closer to God, who draws near to us, then how can we continue to approach Him in even the final days? Well, I think one way to do that is to recognize that now, maybe more than any other time during Lent, is the perfect time to center ourselves in the Eucharist. During Holy Week, we celebrate at the end of the Holy Week, the three holiest days of the year are Triduum, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, leading, of course, into Easter Sunday. We have a whole episode dedicated to Holy Week coming next week. But I think it's important that our Triduum begins with Holy Thursday when Jesus gives us the Eucharist. And the Eucharist is not an idea, it's not a concept. It is Jesus Christ present to us fully, body, blood, soul, and divinity. We actually did an entire series on the Eucharist and revival and making the Eucharist a priority in our home last spring here on Ave Explores. You can go find it if you just scroll a little further back in the feed. Some incredible episodes are in that season. And we are in the midst of Eucharistic revival here in our country. Our bishops called for this, inviting us to pray for revival, to come to a Congress in Indianapolis this summer, to invest ourselves in an investment of Jesus in our lives. And when we put the Eucharist at the center, we start to see that Jesus is not something distant or small, but is actually everything. And Lent, where we've maybe hopefully drawn a little closer to the Lord, has stirred within us a desire to continue to draw closer to Him. And where and how can we do that? Well, with the Blessed Sacrament, with the Eucharist. Tanner Kalina is one of the Eucharistic missionaries for the National Eucharistic Revival. He's working very closely in planning the Congress this summer and helping arrange the pilgrimage that's going to take place all across the country. He's working on the Eucharistic Revival podcast. And we got to sit down with Tanner to talk about how the Eucharist can be a source of revival within our Lenten seasons. And as we're wrapping up Lent, and we are coming to the end, and we can say that definitively, as we're wrapping up Lent, there's something really beautiful about when we invest ourselves in the Eucharist to finish Lent strong. Not because it was a to-do list item, oh, I got to check my strong Lent off of my bucket list of things I have to do as a Catholic, but because it's been edifying, it's been satisfying, it's been something that's grown us into a better person, into who we're meant to be in Christ. This is all part of our Ave Explorer series, digging into Father Agostino Torres's Lenten book, Made for Heaven. We have really loved talking about this book and interviewing people. All of our interviews are up on the podcast feed. All of Father Agostino's videos are available on AveMariaPress.com. We'd love it if you'd give our podcast a rating, a review, share it with your friends, let them know that this has been something positive and good for you in the Lenten season. And for right now, we'd love it if you'd sit back and enjoy our conversation with Eucharistic missionary for the National Eucharistic Revival, Tanner Kalina, about how the Eucharist can revive our Lent. Tanner, welcome to Ave Explorers.
Thank you for having me, Katie.
Absolutely. I see you everywhere. You pop up on my Instagram all the time. Introduce yourself to people, who you are, what you get to do, and where you are.
My name's Tanner Kalina, and I work for the National Eucharistic Congress. Very fortunate to be working for an unprecedented movement in our church, really. Never before have our bishops collectively and almost unanimously asked for a revival. And what better movement to be oriented around than our Eucharistic Lord. So that's what I do. I try and make our Lord known in the Blessed Sacrament. I was a focused missionary for a couple years. And then before that, I was actually in the entertainment industry out in Los Angeles before the Lord called me. Just a much deeper reversion to the faith.
What was that like being in LA?
Gosh, wow. You know, it's the ultimate love it, hate it town. yeah, it operates on a whole different realm of reality. Like, I feel like in most of America and most of the world, there's at least some sort of like recognition of right and wrong. I mean, as we grow into an apostolic age, that's getting a little bit water. But like LA, reality is just like totally different. What is like right in LA would be totally wrong elsewhere. And what is wrong in LA would be like right elsewhere. Like, it's just, it's a wild town. It just has its own kind of set of rules. But it's in California, which is, I think, the most beautiful state nature-wise. Like, it's just, it has desert, ocean, mountains, skiing, surfing, all the things. It's awesome.
At what point did you realize, I need to get the heck out of here?
Well, there's a chance I go back. We'll see. I don't know if I ever decided to get out of there.
I mean, like the entertainment, like the Hollywood rat race.
Yeah, the Hollywood rat race. So there was a moment. So I had a film coming out. All the things, the red carpet premiere, the lights, the buzz, the fun things. And it was supposed to be like the best moment of my life. You know, I thought that like, this is what I was made for. But I remember just having a drink with a buddy who was on Saturday Night Live, which was kind of like the dream of all dreams for me. And we were just talking. And in that moment, he was like really jealous. He's like, man, me and like every single person on the cast of Saturday Night Live wishes they were you right now. And I was like, dude, I feel that. I feel like this should be the best moment of my life, but I'm kind of envious of you guys. Like, I would do anything to be in y'all shoes. And he was like, no way, man. We all wish we were in your shoes. And it was a big wake up moment for me in that moment to be like, wow, the grass will always be greener. There will always be a carrot in front of my face. I will always feel restless. And so I was kind of confronted with St. Augustine's quote, you have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you. And I'd always heard that. And I'd always like intellectually believed it. But I think I was confronted with like, oh, is this actually the truth? Like, am I actually designed and made for a deep relationship with the Lord? And is that the only thing that will satisfy me? And not all these other fancy schmancy things.
It's interesting you say that the grass is always greener, because I think we do that in the church sometimes. Like, we look at what another person either is doing or just another person's pursuit of holiness, and there's comparison. And rather than like, I'm going to focus on my journey to Jesus, I am just looking around constantly trying to find what somebody else is doing on their journey and then just imitate that. And while imitation is a form of flattery, like, we're ultimately not imitating Jesus. When you got out of there, did you immediately find focus? Like, what was those, you leave, you recognize this is not good for me, I'm restless. How did you find the rest that you needed?
So yeah, praise God. I think the Lord knew that I needed things real clear for me. So I got kind of the classic red pill, blue pill decision when I was out in Los Angeles. I hit a fork in the road. I was just really bumming it. I was bouncing off, you know, couch to couch, friend house to friend's house. I'm looking for a place to live. And I was presented with two options. And on one hand, I could live in this mansion right off the beach. Like, no joke, a mansion. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be next door to one of Hollywood's major A-listers. And I'd have my own private waterfall in my backyard. And who doesn't want their own private waterfall? It was just kind of this unreal dream scenario. And I'd be paying basically nothing because I'd be living with one of my buddies from my acting class whose dad owned the place. I could live in that house, or I could live in this like really small house in Venice, California. Like, small house is a very kind term for it. Maybe shack shanty is maybe more appropriate. And I'd be living with five other guys, way more crammed up, sharing a bathroom, paying more for that tiny house than I would for the mansion. But these five guys all talked about Jesus like they knew him. Mm. And I was really attracted to that. And while I was wrestling with this kind of carrot, just perennial carrot dangling in front of my face, I chose to live with those five guys because I knew in my heart that I needed community. I needed other people to help me, to push me, to encourage me. And those guys like really did encourage me and push me. They'd push me into the word. They pushed me into prayer. And it was there in prayer where things started to become more clear that it was like time to get out of the entertainment industry. It was time to go deeper with the Lord. It was time to like really hand him over everything. It was really silence, maybe really giving silence a full on concerted effort for the first time in my life that I was able to find like the direction to go.
Yeah. It sounds like there was like you said, red pill, blue pill, there's like a stark contrast between your options. I sometimes like to play the game like, okay, well, the what if? So if you had chosen the mansion, like where would you be? And we can only play that game so often before it either drives us crazy or the Lord like smacks us upside the head and says, please stop doing that.
Sure.
But it sounds like in that silence, the Lord really clarified a lot of things for you, that drastic choice, and you chose maybe the road that most people wouldn't choose. You chose the option that would take you closer to the heart of Jesus, which is not what the world tells us. And Lent, I feel like we had this conversation a few weeks ago with Sister Josephine. Lent is like super weird for some people. Mm. Like they look at us and they're like, wait, you're purposefully giving up sweets? You're purposely going to mass more? You're giving away your money? And the world is confused by it. When you started to revert back to your faith, what was it in Catholicism that attracted you into like, okay, this, I'm going to go all in. Like the silence has led me closer to Jesus and this is what I'm going to do as a result.
Yeah. It was always the Eucharist. I grew up in the Bible Belt of America. And so all my best friends were Protestant. Actually, these five guys that I lived with were Protestant. But the Eucharist was always the thing that kept me in the faith. I knew that if Jesus was really here, then I had access to an intimacy that was unparalleled. Mm-hmm. And so not only diving into my prayer life, but just like noticing like an increased hunger for the Eucharist and increased like dependence on our Eucharistic Lord for like my strength. I credit like the Eucharist, Jesus and the Eucharist to really like grounding me and guiding me.
When you had your reversion and you decided to start living differently, was Lent close or far away? Like when did Lent happen in all of that?
No, Lent was a massive part of it. Mm-hmm. So this was just a handful of years ago. All this kind of restlessness I had started maybe in the summer. I moved in with these guys in the fall. And then right at the onset of Lent, we went hard into the word and into prayer. And we basically turned our house into a monastery. And so it was just a glorious time of waking up. I'd brew some coffee in my room. I'd sit with the word and just sit in prayer, sit in silence, see what the Lord had for me, if anything, that day. Then I'd go out for a surf, and then I'd come back and maybe watch like a Father Mike video on YouTube and bounce these ideas off my Protestant friends. And Lent also just gave me like distance from, I guess, relationships in my life that I needed to think more deeply about. And Lent gave me just this space to really create this kind of like monastic life and go all in. And so I don't think without those 40 days, my life would be anywhere near where it is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always interesting. I think a lot of Catholics point to Lent is the reset that we sometimes really desperately need. And it comes right at the perfect time because everybody is so happily exhausted from holidays. And then the year where we've all given up on our New Year's resolutions by the time Lent arrives. And so it's like, I can recommit to no sodas and make it spiritual. And there's kind of this like gung-ho, like I'm going to do it. But it sounds like for you, the gung-ho doing it, like I'm going to actually commit to this, benefited you and wasn't just, I'm going to check it off the box. Like it changed the trajectory of your life. This week 5 is all about Lazarus being raised from the dead. Obviously, his life is going to never be the same. But it's not Lazarus that I care a lot about in this story. It's Martha and Mary that I care about in this story, because they're the ones who have the conversation with Jesus and go to him with like this great confidence and say very clearly, like, you can fix this. Did you find that in this process of reversion and walking away from Hollywood dreams and figuring out the next steps of your life and really going into your faith, was there a great confidence, or was there kind of a trepidation and a nervousness with Jesus? Like, I don't know this guy yet. Like, what is my life going to look like if I trust him?
Oh, absolutely. I was scared out of my mind. And it was the first time, like I said, I had ever sat still. So it was like the first time I gave a holy hour, like a real shot.
How was that?
I took a chair from my kitchen. I put it in my room underneath my crucifix hanging over my door. And I sat and I said, okay, it's like 1232, here we go. And I got about past the first minute, and then my mind started sparking. And then 2 minutes in, I was starting to get antsy. And then 5 minutes in, I stood up and I just started pacing my room. I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I don't know what in the world I'm doing. And I was like, I guess I'll just pace for the next 55 minutes. And I was like, I'll commit to this. You know, Lord, this is the best that I have. I trust that if you are who you say you are, and you're good, then you'll use this. And I think that that's ultimately the heart of Martha and Mary in John 11. It's like they come to Jesus. They have a profound trust that his will is perfectly good and he will do what is best for everyone involved. And they don't know what that is, but they trust that he will move. You know, Romans 8:28, in all things, the Lord works for the good for those who know him. I was scared witless of the Lord. Started, and I was completely antsy and I didn't know what I was doing, but I chose to trust in his goodness because the Lord always brings about plan A, even if we totally flub it. He never drops down to plan B. He always brings about plan A, even if we give him a turd, like he'll turn that turd into the greatest thing that was, even if there was no turd before. And so I chose to trust that. And in so doing, my confidence in the Lord grew exponentially. The next day I was able to sit still for maybe 6 minutes and then 7 minutes. And then I started to be like, okay, this is actually like good. This is a good thing. It's not the end of the world here. Ultimately, like the fear can be combated by like a trust, a determined trust in his goodness.
That's a good word. If you believe he is who he says he is, and he'll do what he says he'll do, then there's no reason to not have confidence.
Exactly.
You know, I'm struck by the fact, Tanner, that a lot of Gen Z guys, I actually don't know how old you are, so maybe I'm putting you in a different generation than you should be, but I think you're Gen Z-er, or maybe you're a Zennial. You're like in between. The number one question, do you remember 9/11? Like, that'll tell me everything I need to know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember 9/11.
So I find that there's like this massive, my husband and I have had this conversation on multiple occasions. There's like a bunch of 40 plus, 45 plus men talking about Jesus this way. And then like some, maybe some 20 somethings. But then there's this like massive group of teenage guys that are looking for really good mentors in faith or looking for really good examples. And they're finding it wanting. Like you either have these talking heads that are like going all in on extremism or going all in on like, I'm just going to make everybody angry about what's going on in the church, or people who are very blasé and very much like, oh, just do whatever feels good. And it's rare to find a normal Catholic guy who can talk about Jesus as if he knows him and can talk about like spending time in the word. That's not a phrase I've heard many young men say. And people like want that. Like, I think they're looking for it. And I guess my question is, why do people want that? And how do we give that to them more? And is Lent an opportunity to maybe provide that for people? Does that make sense?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. So goodness, if by the time this podcast episode comes out, this isn't just like the most popular video in the world, then there's something wrong. But Monsignor Shea's talk at this year's Seek,
so good.
He said it so perfectly. He said, like, in a world that permits everything and forgives nothing, and in a world that is increasingly without God, that maybe all the anxiety and the loneliness and the restlessness that our younger men and women are experiencing, maybe, just maybe, that's an appropriate response. Maybe that's actually a good response. Maybe that's like the right response to a world in which we live in that has all these like just hard things, these hard things for young people. And so I think people are just hungry. People are increasingly hungry. People are increasingly promised happiness and increasingly seeing that those promises come up empty. And they're seeing other friends restless, and they're seeing other friends question these big questions, maybe at an earlier age than ever. And these young kids who question even reality. Like my wife is a youth minister, and in our county, it's the highest suicide rate in the nation. It's touched everyone. It's unreal. It's like horrific where we live. But these kids, they ask questions that you would never expect a 14 or 15 year old to ask, because they just see it in a world where we're hyper connected, we're as lonely as ever. And so people are hungry. People want truth. People see the goodness that Jesus is. And even like universally, it's hard to argue that Jesus is not good. And the saints, honestly, like I think right now the saints are having a little bit of a revival, like the Eucharist. The Eucharist is shining, but the saints are all Eucharistic men and women. And so if the Eucharist shines, they shine. And I think their witness to the faith stands brighter than ever. And so I think our young people are seeing where authentic witnesses have been in history, and that's been in the Catholic Church. And so I think people are just, they're starving for it.
Yeah. And hungry. I mean, hungry for real life people today that they could look to and be like, oh, like you're okay. Like you're not lying to me. Like this is real. That's why I love Father Agostino's book this year, because it is not, there's nothing fluffy about it.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
And he's a CFR, so they're cowboys. So like, they're going to give it to you straight. But I'm especially grateful that in this, like, we're at the last week of Lent. Next week is Holy Week. And so in the final week, we're getting introduced to some very authentic people. Martha, the story of Martha basically telling Jesus off when Mary's not helping with the serving. That's my favorite scripture passage. Lazarus is dead, so Mary's very sad. And then Lazarus is alive again. And I can only like put myself in that moment for a brief second and think like, everybody must have been absolutely shocked. But then also like, oh, like you're not a liar. Like you really do what you say you're going to do, which is that you're going to fix this. You're going to make things better. And I think Lent is this perfect time of 40 days to really ask Jesus, like, are you real? Like, are you true? Is this going to be what you said it's going to be? And the fasting and the praying and the almsgiving reveals that to us. What does Lent look like for you as a young married guy who works for the church? So like professional Catholic in some capacity, but how do you make Lent fruitful in your life with your wife, in your work, and on your own?
Yeah. I mean, the big three: prayer, fasting, almsgiving. Carving out more time to pray, not just, you know, not let my holy hour become a holy 59, a holy 59 minutes, but really, really going deeper with the Lord. Not relying on my usual reads, maybe as long as I do, but maybe daring to spend more time in silence, just like pushing myself. And even my posture of late, I noticed that I crossed my legs. This is like a small thing.
No, it's true.
And I don't want to cause anyone scrupulosity. This is just, I notice that my heart is more open when I don't cross my legs. So just like paying attention to just how I feel interiorly, like really going deep and noticing what makes my heart more open to the Lord and daring to do those things. And then fasting is so powerful. Like if you really want to like see your prayer bear fruit, then couple it with fasting and just watch it take off. And so whether that's alcohol or sugar, that's what I usually do during Lent. It'll probably be both this year, which is always hard. I have such a massive sweet tooth. It's disgusting. I'm despicable.
But sweets is a valid one. We give up coffee creamer. That's our big sweet in the house. And it's hard. Black coffee is gross, but like that's what we suck it up for 40 days.
Oh gosh. I am 90% black coffee. Oh,
good for you.
And then 10% red velvet cake. That's basically my composition right there. I should give up coffee, but I do think I would probably have a heart attack. It's probably not, you know, what the Lord is asking.
We always remind my dad that he can only give up one. He can only give up alcohol or coffee, because otherwise it's a penance for the rest of the family. So
he has
to choose. Sometimes he goes back and forth. Like one week he doesn't have a Bud Light with dinner. And then the next week, you know, he chooses to cut off the coffee. But even the small sacrifice, what you're saying, can have this bigger benefit. What about almsgiving? I mean, I think that's the one that everybody kind of forgets about. If you're young and starting your career, like how do you find ways to be generous?
Yeah, that is a great question. And if anyone has any recommendations, please email me. Denver, where my wife and I live right now, is a I don't know what it's called, like a refugee city where immigrants can come. And mm-hmm. Texas is just sending busloads of people right now from Venezuela. And it's just heartbreaking to see, especially when it's -8 degrees right now. And so I think almsgiving this year might look like going to Walmart, getting some blankets, some hand warmers, mm-hmm. some gloves or whatever, and then just maybe driving around or taking those to a charity, taking those to a nearby church. Maybe if there's a soup kitchen that is helping these people, volunteering there one day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like what the Lord's put on my heart of late, because it's just devastating.
And that's a great point to look for the tangible. Like, is there something right in front of you? We yeah. carry boxes of Kind bars around in our minivan.
That's so
when
awesome.
We see people, right? Like, it's just you give them a Kind bar. We had a box of Triscuits in our van, unopened. Like, I don't know why this. I think I just had them in there, like in case the kids got hungry. And there was a guy standing, you know, panhandling. And so I rolled the window down and just handed him the box of Triscuits. And he laughed. He's like, I haven't had these since I was a kid. And so it was just aww. Like for this brief moment, he was so grateful for this box of Triscuits. Of course, I rolled the window down, back up. I drive off. My girl's like, we wanted those. I was like, guys, it was a tangible sacrifice for this man. In that moment, I wanted the Triscuits too. But like now we were able to give them to this guy. So yeah, I think that's a great recommendation for folks to, you know, keep some things readily available. Go add a few things in your Walmart cart. Tanner, we want to give people some tangible encouragement at the end of Lent. And this is the last week. Let's say you are on an escalator or an elevator with somebody and they just share with you, like, my Lent was awful and I am feeling zero motivation to make it good at the end. Like, what's your word of advice to them to just really give it your all in the final few days?
Yeah, I would say, man, give the Lord some time. Like, wake up just 30 minutes earlier and give him that 30 minutes. And it is okay if you have no idea what in the heck you're doing. Paragraph 2559 of the Catechism says, only when we humbly acknowledge that we do not know how to pray as we ought, are we ready to receive fully the gift of prayer.
Mm.
In other words, the first step to praying, according to our beautiful church, is you don't have to know how to pray. Admit that you don't know how to pray. Yeah, I would say just sit. And if you don't know what to pray, hey, great, join the rest of us. And give the Lord some time. Like, just give the Lord some time. Give the Lord a chance to move.
Yeah, that's a good word for sure. Tanner, where can folks follow you? I know you're doing a YouTube series on Fulton Sheen's Life of Christ. Where can people watch that? And I know you have a podcast too. Tell us about that.
Yes. So you can follow along. I'm trying to go through Fulton Sheen's Life of Christ. I think it's one of the modern, just like, epics of like literature and also theology and philosophy. Like, it's his magnum opus. And so he basically walks through the life of Christ one story at a time. I'm trying to regurgitate that to audiences. So you can go to my YouTube, tanner.kalina. I also have a podcast called Saints Alive. Me and my two best friends started that, Alex and Melissa. And you can check us out on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. But we tell the stories of the saints for kids and for adults. We try to bring the stories to life, the greatest stories ever told, written by the hand of God. So yeah, you can check that out at Saints Alive Podcast. And yeah, check out the Eucharistic Revival as well.
Yeah.
Check out the Eucharistic Congress. Go to eucharisticcongress.org. Think about joining the movement. It's it's the coolest thing in the world.
By the time this airs, I'll have my hotel room booked. I don't know, I'm still waiting for an email. I'm waiting for an email from the people who are like organizing the whole thing to tell me where I'm staying. But we will be there with bells and whistles on, and it'll be a blast. So Tanner, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Tanner's a great guy. He's got such a great energy and so many great insights. Follow him on social media. Check out the Eucharistic Revival podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. You know, one thing he said that really struck me was that, you know, he recognized he was kind of drifting. He recognized he was not headed in the direction that was going to be edifying and life-giving. And he did something about it. He could have just continued to wallow. He could have just recognized that his life was headed in the wrong direction. And so, you know, okay, well, let's just let this play out. Let's see what happens. But instead, he pumped the brakes and he recognized that, well, God could maybe show up in my life if I gave him some space to do so. If you've been thinking that this Lenten season you wanted to pray a little bit more, and you just haven't been able to figure out how to do that, well, maybe this is the challenge you need to swing by the Adoration Chapel on your way home from work today, or to spend a few extra minutes in church after Mass, and just sit in the presence of Jesus there in the tabernacle. maybe this is an invitation that you need to hear, that even if you don't necessarily know what to do in Eucharistic adoration, or you don't know what to do when you're sitting in a quiet church, that it's good that you're there at all, that Jesus can do something with you, that you do not necessarily have to be the one that has some sort of agenda or plan, that the Eucharist is available to us, that Jesus Christ makes himself available to us out of love and affection, not because it's an assignment or a project. There's this old story, I think I've said it on the show before. A bunch of speakers use this story all the time as kind of a little intro into adoration. John Vianney, the great curé d'Ars, the priest of France who would hear 15 hours of confession and make himself available to his people. He walked into his church early one morning and there was this peasant guy sitting in the front pew. And it was a pretty regular thing for John Vianney to see this guy sitting in the front pew. And so he finally asked him one day, "What are you doing?" This was an uneducated laborer who didn't know theology, but he was in church all the time. And John Vianney was curious. And the guy said to him, "Well, I look at him and he looks at me." And it was the most profound snapshot of what adoration could be. I think in some ways, that's kind of what Lent can be for us. We're present to God and the Lord is present to us. And we can sit in his presence and we can recognize that when I pray and when I give these things up and when I give of myself generously, that God can do something with that. God can often do something more with that than I could have maybe ever realized or imagined myself. And that there's something really powerful in the docility of that. And so maybe this is the week that you take some time for the Eucharist. You go to an extra daily mass, you swing by that chapel on your way home or to work. You give up your lunch break and you pop in for a holy half hour. You listen to a talk on the Eucharist that you can find on any Catholic platform. You go back and listen to a few of our episodes from our Eucharist series last May here on Ave Explorers, that maybe we end Lent recognizing that the Eucharist can revive us long past these 40 days. We're grateful that you joined us today. We'll be back next week to wrap up our Ave Explorers series with an incredible conversation with Father Tim Anastos, all about Holy Week, what he loves about Holy Week as a priest, the ways that we, as men and women who love our faith, can enter into Holy Week with purpose and intentionality. So make sure you've got this show subscribed to, followed, you've signed up for our emails, and we'll see you next week to wrap up our series of Ave Explorers Lent.